All right, let's open the Word of God again to Ecclesiastes chapter 3. Ecclesiastes chapter 3. Resuming our study at verse 9. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 9. Once again, to warm up, let's check those first 8 verses again. Corrected translation. Everything has an appointed or an allotted time, and there is a time for every pleasure under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant, a time to destroy what is planted. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to demolish and a time to build. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to throw stones and a time to gather stones. A time for embrace and a time for being far away from embracing. A time to be aggressive and a time to give up as lost. A time to guard, a time to keep, a time to throw away, a time to rip apart, and a time to sew together, a time to be silent, and a time to speak, a time to love, and a time to hate, a time for war, and a time for peace. Now, as we continue our study of the allotment of time, we have come in verses 9 and 11 to a new paragraph and a continuation of the subject under the contrast of attitudes toward time. So our new paragraph, verses 9 through 11, a contrast of attitudes toward time. Beginning now in verse 9, I'll read the passage as it stands in the King James Version, and then we'll start to analyze. What profit hath he that worketh in that wherein he laboreth? I have seen the travail which God hath given to the sons of men to be exercised in it. He hath made everything beautiful in his time, and also he hath set the world in their heart, so that no one can find out the work that God maketh from the beginning to the end. This passage is where we begin to encounter some very serious difficulties as far as the original Hebrew is concerned. Part of the problem lies in the fact that words change their meaning and therefore we are faced with anachronisms. But part of the problem is simply the fact that the translator did not do a good job even in his own day and by the standards of 300 years ago. In verse 9, we actually have the expression of a wrong attitude toward time. It begins with an interrogative pronoun, what? The word in the Hebrew looks like this, mah, M-A-H, mah. This is followed by another word, which means not profit exactly, but something very close to it. So we're going to let it stand at that, yithrom. Y or J-I-T-H-R-O-N. Now, yithrom will have to stand as prophet, though there are better words for it, which will be explained by the rest of the sentence. What prophet hath he that worketh? The calactive participle of asa plus the definite article refers to the one working or manufacturing. A-S-A-H, asa. The one working or the one manufacturing. What profit to the one working in that field of monotonous and wearisome labor is what the verse is actually saying. What profit to the one working, and then the next phrase, in that wherein is literally in that which he laboreth. And this is where the problem is. Strictly a mistranslation. For he laboreth is not a verb at all. It's an adjective. It's the adjective amel. A-M-E-L. Amel means monotonous work. It means wearisome work. Doing the same thing again and again and again. Doing it until you're tired. Doing it till you're worn out. Doing it till you're exhausted. Can describe many jobs in the military, but it describes many jobs in life. For many things in life are monotonous, wearisome, exhausting, tiresome. So literally, what profit to the one working in that field of monotonous and wearisome labor? Now actually we have a person here who has some kind of a job that is boring, that is monotonous, that is exhausting, and one feels as though he's not really accomplishing anything in life. And so the question takes up an attitude toward time. Many people have jobs where they do the same thing over and over again. Jobs where they're tired, worn out, exhausted. Jobs where they keep going and keep going, but they don't really understand why they're keeping going, and they really don't like the job, and they don't like the work, and it's always a great temptation in the evils of socialism to simply sit at home and get even more money than for working, and to become a ward of the state. Now, there's also another discouraging aspect. People who have jobs, and this is most people, who do the same thing again, again, and again, day in and day out, and who work and work and work, and it doesn't seem to be important, and it isn't recognizable, and it's an underpaid type of job, and so on. These people began to feel as though they are wasting time. And that's the attitude which is expressed in this verse. It is the wrong attitude toward time. Once again, listen to the translation before the summary. What profit to the one working in that field of monotonous and wearisome labor? All right, the summary. Point one. Many find that their time filled with monotonous routine and wearisome labor is a waste of time. Point two. The corrected translation of this verse expresses a resultant cynicism toward time. If you work in a monotonous situation, you become cynical about time. And when you become cynical about time, you don't even work hard on your job. You can't even stand the monotony. So the second point that is noted is the attitude of cynicism expressed in this verse. Three, as a result, one comes to the place where life has no meaning, no purpose, and no definition. Life loses meaning. Four, without the sole assets of doctrine, time therefore becomes a slavery, a bondage from which there is no escape but death. Five, the cynicism of the attitude expressed in this verse reflects no capacity for life and failure to appreciate what God has provided as stated in the next two verses. Six, the cynical question of this verse indicates lack of doctrine in the soul. It indicates often a state of reversionism, believer or unbeliever, and a total failure to utilize the divine provision of time. Seven, for the believer with doctrine in his soul, the most insignificant of jobs becomes a place of service to the Lord, a place for the function of the royal priesthood. And many of you who find your job monotonous and find significance slipping from time in your life. Remember, that job, that circumstance, that place of monotony is full-time Christian service. You can only accept this as true, however, with a proper amount of doctrine in the soul. Every moment you log in time on a job that is monotonous, that is difficult, that is wearisome, that is exhausting, that is unappreciated, a job where often the public run roughshod over you, where you have to be nice to idiots, where you have to smile when you want to punch, where you have to watch a machine because if you slip, there goes that hand again. It becomes imperative for you to realize that doing your job is unto the Lord in the most monotonous of circumstances is service, is winning in the angelic conflict. And while people may not appreciate what you are doing, it doesn't make any difference. Whether the boss appreciates it or not, that doesn't make any difference. But scores, hundreds of fallen angels see a life of what appears to be monotony becoming something meaningful and wonderful and powerful. Now you listen carefully before we leave this verse. There is no such thing as a monotonous job. Just monotonous people in routine. Walking a guard mount. Close order drill. Selling over the counter. Punching a typewriter. Waiting on tables. Whatever it is. Sweeping dirt under the rug. There's no such thing as a monotonous job. It is simply disorientation to time. Now, the true perspective of time is given in the next two verses. Verse 10. I have seen, and this is Solomon, and he has seen everything. Cal perfect from the verb ra'ah. R-A-A-H. Solomon does not mean to see here. He means more than that. He is speaking not of seeing something, but of research. Solomon has seen every aspect of life. Solomon has seen every circumstance of life. There is nothing in life that Solomon has not seen or experienced. And so a corrected translation in keeping with the verse, I have researched. Next, you have the word travail, a noun which does not mean travail. En yon is what it is. I-N-Y-A-N. I have seen en yon. En yon is a job, a business, a task, a matter, a thing, an employment, an occupation. The last is the meaning here. I have researched the occupation which God hath given to the sons of men. Asher, Nathan, Elohim, Lavane, Hazam, which means exactly as it sounds, which God has given to the human race or the sons of men. Now, the important thing here to note is, in the first place, and we must note these categorically so we do not go too far with it. First of all, God has given something to us as members of the human race. The Cal Perfect of Nathan is translated, hath given, and is correct. N-A-T-H-A-N, Cal Perfect. So, the job you have that's so dull, so monotonous, the job that you resent, the job that you are so full of cynicism, God gave you that job in eternity past. Nathan, Cal Perfect. And if God gave you a job in eternity past that you resent and do not like and regard with a cynical attitude, then you'd better look again at that job. That is a gift from God. That is a gift to fill in a certain allotment of time. That's your place of service. And you are the only person who can get into that lousy, stinking, horrible, monotonous, dull, boring job and do it right as unto the Lord. And again, when God gives you a job, no matter how dull it appears, no matter how monotonous, no matter how horrible, He gave you that job, and you were just like the defense of the Dallas Cowboys when they played Minnesota. You're in the trenches all the time. But He picked you to be in the trenches. No applause, no recognition, no pat on the head, no well done, no letter signed sincerely. God gave you the privilege of being in the trenches. And some of you have had a bad year because you forgot who gave it to you. You got your eyes on the baubles, on the ornaments. You forgot the source. And not only did God provide that job for you, but that job that you have, which is so dull and so horrible, He provided it in eternity past. He provided the job before you ever existed. It was decreed. So take another look at that job. Take another good look at it. Whatever it is. Secondly, beside Nathan, we should notice that time is very clearly portrayed as a part of the angelic conflict. Time is a part of the angelic conflict. We have time to avail ourselves of the grace of God, to utilize what He has provided to make life meaningful. And some of you are bored people. Some of you are dull people. Some of you are defeated people. Some of you are unstable people. Some of you are just plain down the middle jackasses. Flaky. Because you have never understood divine allotment of time and the utilization of provision. God has a part in the divine decrees. Military men understand it as beans and bullets. God has provided for the conflict. He has provided doctrine for your soul. And it isn't, you don't have to be flaky. You don't have to be a screwball. You don't have to be a jackass. You don't have to be a complainer. One of the greatest tests of character in this life is monotony. Doing the same thing again and again and again and again. And in every life there is allotted monotony. Now the question is, since God gave you this, what are you going to do with it? Going to blow it for another year or not? It always looks better on the other side of the fence. Those who have monotonous jobs in civilian life think that all of military life is glamour. Very few people realize the tremendous amount of monotony in military life. Those in military life think that all civilian life is girls and fun as they look over the barbed wire. God assigned to each one an allocation of time. You're doing something. It's your full-time Christian service. And it is the battle of monotony that can only be defeated. The only defeat of monotony in that battle is doctrine in the soul. Now, we must avail ourselves of divine provision. If He gave us the job, He gave us the means of fulfilling it, not just getting the job done, but doing it so that He is glorified, so that it stands as a victory in the angelic conflict. So we have to have time to avail ourselves of God's grace in this type of a thing. And all of us are going to spend some time in the trenches. I have researched the occupation of time which Elohim has given to the sons of Adam, or the human race. The best translation, then, I have researched the occupation of time which Elohim has given to the human race. Now get this. God has given you time to do something monotonous, to do something routine. But get this. To be exercised. The Cal infinitive construct of the verb ana. A-N-A-H. Ana. It has a variety of meanings, ranging from to be occupied with, to exercise, to be afflicted, to be humbled. And in this context, it means to be occupied with. But it doesn't exclude exercise, because if you exercise properly, it inevitably must be painful. It must be excruciating. And it must be something that you don't want to repeat, but you do and do and do. So to be occupied with is the concept if you include the discipline of exercise. God has given man a present of time. Not only did He give us a present of time, but He gave us allocations within that present. We've already seen the allocations, and we were assured by the very first verse that He also allocates to us pleasure. Pleasure under heaven, not pleasure in heaven. See, most preachers that I know want to promise you pleasure in heaven, but don't want you to have any pleasure on earth. They want you to strain your way through life, giving up this and giving up that and all the rest of it. And they're really mixed up. Because when God gave you this time, it includes pleasure, but also includes monotony. Now, we all have our ideas of monotony. Some of you get your ideas firsthand. Some of you get them from something else. Babe Hiskey's here tonight, and he's a golf pro. Now, monotony to me is swinging a golf club all day, keeping your head down, having the correct swing. That's monotony to me. Whacking a bucket full of golf balls out into the blue. I mean in the blue. They're supposed to land in the green, but that doesn't always work out. That's monotonous. But it's what God allotted to him. So we all have areas where there is monotony, but it's something we're occupied with because we do it as unto the Lord. So literally, let's get a better translation, to be occupied in it. God has given each one of us a present of time. The amount of time given to each one of us is a matter of the sovereignty and wisdom of God. But time is no good to us unless it's hooked up with Bible doctrine, starting with the gospel and moving to the whole realm of divine wisdom. Literally then, I have researched the occupation of time which Elohim has given to the human race, to be occupied in it. All right, let's summarize what this means. One, Solomon has seen both sides of this gift from God, that is time. Solomon has seen wasted time, that's reversionism. Solomon has seen wonderful time, happy time, blessed time, that's super grace. He's seen both sides. Two, this is dramatized by the 12th chapter of Ecclesiastes, which of course will be a conclusion to all of this. Three, those who reach old age in time fall into two distinct categories. Totally miserable, totally happy. A total pain in the neck or a total pleasure to be around. There's no variation. The variations all exist in youth and middle age. But once you lose youth and its glamour, and its beauty, and its vigor, or whatever it is, whenever you lose that, there's nothing left but the real you. You're either old and a jerk, or you're old and you're great. You're either old and a pleasure, or old and a pain. Not all of us are going to reach old age, but those who do have before them this principle. You've gone through everything in time, and what you have gone through in time is either related to doctrine, positive, or related to doctrine, negative. If it's related to doctrine, negative, the worst people in the world are old people. If it's related to doctrine, positive, the best people in the world are old people, and everyone else is just coming along. So that old age, says Ecclesiastes 12, is the great determining factor, but we're not that far along. Point four. There is no in-between for old age. This is why the older people become, either the more miserable they become or the happier they become. Point five. It all depends on how much time after salvation you spend with doctrine as the guide, doctrine as the application, doctrine as the motivator, doctrine as the viewpoint, doctrine as the incentive. Six, we're now forced to face a principle. Time spent in doctrine is never wasted. Repeat, time spent in doctrine is never wasted. And some of you like what you're doing, but you're going to lose out in what you're doing because you've neglected doctrine. And some of you dislike what you're doing, and in the monotony of it, you are also in danger of neglecting doctrine because of cynicism, because of bitterness. So those of you who like what you're doing, you're in trouble. Those of you who dislike what you're doing, you're in trouble. And the only thing that straightens both categories out is doctrine in the soul. Beware, some of you during this last year have slipped with regard to your daily portion of doctrine. And you're hurting. And here is a study to bring you back around to face the facts. If you like what you're doing, you better get with doctrine. If you dislike what you're doing, you better get with doctrine. And you say, some of you, what if it's neither? You'd better get with doctrine and find out. So our principle, time spent in Bible doctrine is never wasted. So point seven. The key to the enjoyment of time is Bible doctrine saturating the soul. Eight. Solomon researched the whole thing. He tried to get along without Bible doctrine, and he said, I will get along without Bible doctrine. I'm in a position to. I'm the wealthiest man in the world. I'm the king of Israel. I have everything at my disposal. I'm going to prove to you I can get along without doctrine. And this is how he tried. First, he said, I am going to get along without doctrine because I am going to have academic achievement. I am going to prove that academic achievement is a substitute for fellowship with God. I'm going to prove that academic achievement is satisfying, gratifying, and the best way to fill in time. And I'm going to neglect doctrine and go in for academic achievement, just as some people in Baraka Church have done so. There are some people who came to Baraka Church years ago whose parents were all for the Young Life campaign, rah, rah, forget doctrine, let's go to the marshmallow roast types. And these kids decided that the answer to life was academic achievement. And I can think of two people from Baraka Church who were once young people here who now have PhDs, academic achievement, and they are nothing. They are less than nothing. I just hope they keep their mouths shut about Baraka if they ever came here. I'm ashamed to even think about them. They are pseudo-intellectuals. They are intellectual snobs. And they are dumber than anyone here, though they have 3 degrees apiece. Now, it's all right if you want higher learning. Don't forget who gave you the time to go to school. Don't forget the reason. Don't forget the source. And therefore, don't neglect Bible doctrine. I used to think you had to neglect Bible doctrine in the Army till some of these Rangers. Now, I'm not talking about guys walking guard posts. I'm not talking about barracks life. I'm talking about Ranger training, the toughest training in all services today. And I was shocked the other night to be gathered around with a group of Rangers, and they told me that even in training, they can get doctrine every day. Now, you know where that puts you? Right behind the fat 8-ball. Oh, but it rolls over you and wakes you up. Every day, they can get doctrine. Don't tell me your troubles. When you hear what these Rangers go through and they pull out that little cassette and clunk, here goes that scratchy voice again. They're getting doctrine. All right, Solomon tried a second thing. He got tired of school. Everyone gets tired of school. They should. That's what school's for, to get tired of. So he said, I think I'm going out. He said exactly what my college roommate said a couple of thousand years later. I'm so damn tired of studying. I'm going out and raise hell. And he did. Yea, verily he did. And Solomon did the same thing before him. Solomon said, with all this dough, why should I go to school? I've already got it made. What am I in school for? What am I trying to prove? So he said, he's not going to prove anything. He's going out and have a ball. And so in Ecclesiastes 2, 1 through 11, he went out for all kinds of pleasure. But he did the same thing he did while he was in school. He neglected Bible doctrine. He didn't have the capacity for pleasure, and every pleasure turned sour. See, some of you are on the verge of becoming intellectual snobs because you go to school. You're terribly impressed with yourself. You made the dean's list. I used to make a dean's list, too. Only they, those days they had 2 lists. Now, that doesn't mean anything because you're going to lose track of the thing that really counts. It's the Lord. If you do have some brains and you do succeed academically, guess who gave you those brains? And guess who could turn them into a fried egg overnight? And if you do have pleasure, would you remember who allotted you the time? and the capacity for pleasure comes from Bible doctrine. The third was the inevitable result of frustrations in all pleasure areas. What I need, says Solomon, is someone to carry on the name. I'm going to find my pleasure in heritage. And so he went that route. And he had a son. Anyone who has that in mind is going to have a son. It's inevitable. And that was what he had in mind, and that's what happened. And when he had a son, guess what? The dumbest ass who ever ruled in Israel was his son. So it didn't work out. But you know why? There's nothing wrong with having a son. Don't be ashamed if you have a son. I'm not ashamed of my son. And I like the idea of heritage too. And I wouldn't trade my son in for any 50,000 sons. But I'll tell you something. I know the source. The source is the Lord. And if I ever lose track of that, then I'll never enjoy my son. And I hope I don't give you the impression that it's a pain in the neck to be around Bobby. Because it's not. But I look at that tall infantryman and I keep remembering, the Lord provided this. Well, you have to keep the Lord in mind always, because some of you are going to get rich. We've got some of our members who aren't here tonight. They're out getting rich, by the way. We've got some young men in this church that before they're 40, they're going to be millionaires. Or they're going to be so broke they'll wish they'd never lived. It's touch and go, but it's interesting. Now, what are they going to do with all that money? Oh, you know how people are going to give it all to Barack at church. I laugh all the way home on that one. That's good for extra laughs when I get a little tired. No, I'll tell you what they're going to do with it. If they have Bible doctrine, they're going to enjoy it. They're going to have a ball with it. You know, you can have fun with money if you have doctrine. But then if you don't have doctrine in your soul, there's nothing worse to have than money. It adds to your troubles. You don't believe that, huh? Wait till you get it. If you're without doctrine, the money is not going to mean anything. If you have doctrine, you have capacity for money. If you're in super grace, you will enjoy that money in a fantastic way, in a wonderful way, in a way which will glorify God and make demons grind their teeth. The trouble with Solomon is he had the money, but he didn't have the doctrine. The trouble with Solomon, he had the education, but he didn't have the doctrine. He had the pleasure, but he didn't have the doctrine. He had the heritage, but he didn't have the doctrine. He had the money, but he didn't have the doctrine. So he said, it's none of it worth anything. What I really need to do is just to build a reputation so people will never forget me. And he went all out to do things so people would never forget him. He put his name on every signpost. If there wasn't a post, he put one in, made it out of gold, made it out of rock. He had his name carved in every rock. He built buildings, public buildings. He built private buildings. He built ranches. He built palaces. He built offices everywhere so people would remember. I'm going to have a reputation. No one's ever going to forget me. But the trouble was, in Ecclesiastes 7, 1 through 20, no doctrine in the soul. He saved all this time, but no doctrine. And all of a sudden, he realized, he built up all this reputation everyone was talking about, and he suddenly realized, it's in the passage, I'll just summarize it for you. Hey, when I die, what will they remember in the next generation? Uh-uh. Will they remember the one after that? No, I'll be long gone and long forgotten. You know what he said then? It isn't worth it to build up a reputation like that. So I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to pick out one thing that I enjoy doing more than anything else, and that's all I'm going to do for the rest of my life. That's right, sex. Ecclesiastes 7, 26 through 29. And I'm going to do it and do it and do it and do it. You know what happened? He ran out of gas. Energy crisis. No doctrine. And it wasn't all he thought it was going to be. So he said, well, he tried two or three other things, but he finally came to the conclusion that while there are a lot of wonderful things that God allots to us in time, they're no good without Bible doctrine in the soul. And that was the problem, and that's what he came to realize. Without Bible doctrine in the soul, the believer with the best of everything is the most miserable of all. And the believer was designed in time to have his capacity for these allotments through Bible doctrine in the soul. Again, the verse says, I have researched the occupation of time which Elohim has given to the human race to be occupied in it. But remember, Elohim, or God, gave it, and the occupation comes from Bible doctrine. And that's why he was able to say, he has made wrong. He has manufactured. Cal perfect from Asa. Asa means to manufacture something out of something. Here it refers to manufacturing blessing, success, true spiritual greatness out of Bible doctrine. No matter how insignificant or monotonous the job is, no matter how great the pleasure, to manufacture out of doctrine the blessings of life. He has manufactured out of doctrine, notice this, everything, F, hakol, and that means the everything, it's really everything. Everything, that means every category. And then he adds, not beautiful, but yafeh, the masculine noun, yafeh. J-A-P-H-E-H. You know what yafeh does not really mean beautiful? Means excellent, good. He has manufactured out of doctrine every category, everything, good, in its own time. Literally, not in his time, but in its own time. Look, you say money is good in its own time. Sex is good in its own time. Pleasure is good in its own time. Hard, monotonous work is good. And it is in its own time. There's a time for everything. And doctrine puts everything in its own time and makes it wonderful and makes it a blessing. Now it says he hath set, and that's wrong because that's the cal perfect of nathan. It means he is given. Once again, we have this great verb of grace, N-A-T-H-A-N, nathan, meaning to give, and should be translated, also he has given the world. Wrong. Ha-olam. He hasn't given the world. He's given the ha-olam. Ha-olam means the eternal, and it refers to doctrine. He has given the eternal doctrine in their right lobes, literally. All right, what do we have so far? He has manufactured out of doctrine everything, that is, every category, good in its own time. This everything refers to verses 2 through 8, all the allotments there. Good in its own time. Also, he has given the eternal doctrine in their right lobes. Here is doctrine in the soul as the basis for capacity for these allotments in time. So that, wrong. This word is phrase is literally without which. Ma vali asher, which means without which. Not so that, but without which. No man. Generic term. Ha adam. No one. So that mankind, literally, cannot perceive, cannot find. You have can find out, but it's low. matzah, which is the negative plus the cal imperfect of matzah. Very bad translation in here, M-A-T-S-A. And it should be translated, mankind cannot perceive the work which the Elohim has manufactured from the beginning even to the end of history. I want you to hear this verse very carefully. He has manufactured out of doctrine and time everything, every category of verses 2 through 8, everything good in its own time, but you underline in its own time. Also, he has given the eternal doctrine in their right lobes, without which doctrine mankind cannot perceive what the God, Elohim, has manufactured from the beginning even to the end of history. Now, I'd like to think that there is one generation of believers who would be able to probe the depths of this verse. I would like to think that the people of Baraka Church would, in their lifetime, fulfill what has not been fulfilled in hundreds of years, to actually fulfill the principle of perceiving what the God has manufactured from the beginning even to the end of history. Now, you have several things going for you in fulfilling this verse. You have the availability of doctrine every day. You have the accumulation of doctrine day in and day out, year in and year out. And somewhere along the line, there's going to be those of you who are going to break through, who are going to fulfill this to the hilt. And instead of being dried up fundies, you are going to be strong, hard-living, wonderful people for the Lord. Not some dried, shriveled up legalist, dishonoring the Lord, full of your pious amens and epigrams, giving up this and giving up that, freaks. Somewhere along the line, some of you are going to break through and find out what time is all about. Just because you're in time, it doesn't mean you know anything about it. Fish live in the water, but I know more about the water than the fish do. Just because you're living in time, it doesn't mean you even have a clue. When someone says, what time is it? You can say, in 15 seconds, it'll be a new year. But that doesn't mean anything. What time is it, really? What is time to you? What is time all about? Now, we'll stay with the passage until we find out. Now, Father, a new year has just come to an end. We are here, alive, moving into the year 1974. We are brought into this year because of your grace. We have neither earned nor deserved this right. We are here as your guests. You are the host. And as the host for the coming year, we pray that God the Holy Spirit will challenge us by the things that we are studying now and will continue to do so with regard to the true divine perspective of time. Time is just a gift. And with this gift, you have given us doctrine. Doctrine is a gift. And we are the beneficiaries of both. And right now, here in time, we meet doctrine. We can use doctrine. It's the power, the energy, the greatness, the capacity, the nobility of our royal priesthood. And therefore, Father, we pray that as never before, we might be challenged as to the value and importance of Bible doctrine as we now enter this new year. We ask this in Christ's name. Amen.